Well, good day and welcome back to another episode here of the Disaster Podcast. I'm your host, Jamie Davis, the Pod Medic, and I'm really happy to have you all joining us today. We've got a hot topic in the news that we're bringing to you this week on the episode, and I think it's going to be some good information all the way around. So we'll have that up here in just a second. But of course, it wouldn't be a Disaster Podcast episode if we weren't bringing you our co-host, Sam Bradley, newly moved to Colorado. So Sam, are you settled in now? It's been a week or two. And
well, I'm still working on it. It takes a long time to unpack. I thought it took a long time to pack. It's worse trying to unpack. But
oh, I've got stuff. I've been in this house for 18 years. There's still stuff in boxes from our original house. So
that might be an interesting surprise should you open those someday.
I think so.
Well, and of course, next week I'm going to your part of the world, Baltimore, and you just told me there's a nice storm coming in. Thank you very much for that.
You know, it's as accurate as week out weather can be. There's supposedly another storm front coming across to hit midweek next week here in the Mid-Atlantic and Northeast. So that could affect our guest as well. And, you know, so we might have some snow in midweek next week. It's February in the East Coast, and we never know what we're going to get.
Well, ours is all melted now here in Colorado, so we'll see what happens the rest of the season. It's a new adventure for me. But we're going to talk about bugs today, are we not?
Well, yeah, bugs and bugs that carry bugs. So without further ado, why don't you go ahead and introduce our guest, Sam?
And I hope I pronounce his name right. And we're really happy to have Vincent on, Raccoon Yellow. I think I did that right, because he is not only an expert in this subject, but he's a podcaster and he does all kinds of great things in getting information out there to people. So, Vince, why don't you tell the folks about yourself and what you do, and then we'll jump into Zika.
Thanks very much, guys, for having me. I think it's really cool that you guys talk about the weather. I do the same thing on all my podcasts, and people seem to like it, you know, and we just fall naturally into the weather. And here, I'm in the East Coast, it's warm, and the past few days, it's been below freezing, so go figure that. Anyway, I've been a professor at Columbia University for over 35 years, where I have a lab, and we work on viruses. I've been working on viruses for a long time, and maybe 10 years ago, I decided that I needed to talk about what I did more, so I started blogging, and I started podcasting, and amazing things happened. People started listening. So today I have, what, 5 different podcasts on viruses, bacteria, parasites, evolution, and more. And you can find them all at microbe.tv.
Almost, I suppose people call you the bug guy then, maybe.
Well, it's not technically correct, right?
So they call me the virus guy. Actually, I want to be Vinny the virus guy, you know.
You need to get a cartoon character. That could be like a Saturday morning thing for kids, right? Learn all about virology. And
there you go. You might have to start another podcast for that.
I'm okay with that. I don't have a problem.
Well, it's great that we have someone like you who is such an expert in the area. And I'll be honest, since I've been involved in this move, I haven't watched much TV or news, and I pick up little things here and there on, you know, the infection and where it is and how it's affecting people. So I'm just going to toss this to you and let you educate us, especially me, on this subject, because it's important. And one thing we try to do on our podcast certainly is bring really up-to-date information for the folks out there, and they seem to like that. So I'm going to toss it to you and tell us what you know.
Okay. And of course, guys, if you have any questions, just interrupt me. Okay. Don't worry.
We will. We'll jump right in.
All right. So this virus, this new latest outbreak by Zika virus, it's been on my radar since November, December of last year. We actually did one of our This Week in Virology podcasts on it in December, and we've just done 2 in the past couple of weeks. So the story is, this is a virus that up until a year ago has really been running below the radar. It was discovered in 1947 in a forest in Uganda called the Zika Forest, and that's where it got its name from. What they were doing back then is they had monkeys up in cages, and they were looking for yellow fever virus. So they would see if the monkeys got sick, and they'd bring them in the lab and see what they had. So one of their monkeys got sick in a fever, brought it in the lab. It didn't have yellow fever, and from that monkey, they got this new virus, which had never been seen before, called Zika virus. And then over the next couple of years, they found the virus in mosquitoes in the same forest. And then little by little, they started to get evidence that this virus was infecting people. They would take serum from people and show that these individuals had evidence of previous infection. And that was first in Africa. And then slowly over the 50s and 60s, the virus moved into Asia. And then in early 2000s, into the Pacific. Now, what does Zika do to people? So first of all, it's a mosquito-transmitted virus. And we think that mosquitoes of the Aedes species or genus spread the virus, like Aedes aegypti and many other similar species. That's the only established mechanism of spread that we know of. And when you get bitten by a mosquito and the mosquito delivers the virus to you, you get a pretty mild illness. You may be, you have about a 20% chance of getting fever, a rash on your skin, and maybe joint aches. And everybody pretty much recovers. It's not really a serious virus infection. Now, where the virus came from is anybody's guess. It's obviously somewhere in the forest because that's where that initial monkey got infected. But it does seem to go from person to person. So when a person gets infected, they develop virus in their blood, and then if they get bitten by another mosquito, the mosquito will pick up virus and give it to someone else, and so forth. Around 2007, there was a sizable outbreak in an island in the Pacific called Yap Island, Y-A-P, and this was an outbreak of a few thousand people. That was the biggest one that had been seen so far. And then after that, it spread to French Polynesia. Yeah, in around the same time, 2012, 2013. And then in early 2015, there was evidence that it was starting to infect people in Brazil. Now, as you know, as our world is growing and transportation improves on a yearly basis, it's very easy for diseases to spread. So we figure that either a mosquito took a plane ride, which has been documented in many cases before, or an infected person, they landed in Brazil and started the epidemic. We don't know when that happened. Some people are speculating that it happened during the World Cup when so many people were coming into Brazil. But of course, it could have happened any time, and it just needed one person to start this epidemic. I want to remind everybody that back in 1999, a new virus arrived in New York City. That was West Nile virus. So West Nile virus had not been in the U.S. at all. In fact, not even in North America. It arrived in New York City, started causing outbreaks of West Nile disease, and over the next couple of years, it spread throughout the entire country. And now we have West Nile here permanently. We say it's endemic. It's here to stay. So back to Zika. The real issue came about 6 months or so after the first cases of Zika were discovered in Brazil. There was suddenly an uptick in the number of babies born with microcephaly. In other words, their heads are smaller than they should be. The normal rate of microcephaly in Brazil, which is a country of about, I think, 250 million people, it's about 150 cases a year. In the northwest part of the country, which is rather rural and not well served by the healthcare profession, there was a huge increase, and eventually they had reported 3,000 to 4,000 cases of microcephaly. And a number of people noticed that, you know, this was 6 months after the Zika virus had arrived, and a lot of these women reported having Zika-like illness during their pregnancy.
Now, Vince, I'm going to interrupt you here real briefly. What, why was this not reported before in previous outbreaks? Is this considered maybe a mutation in the virus that's causing this, or is there some other potential explanation?
Well, that, of course, is one of the big questions that has been kicked around. And it's the one question I wanted to know initially. Why didn't we ever see microcephaly in, say, the Yap Island outbreak? But I think the numbers are just too small, most likely. We don't know what the rate of birth defects is after infection, but it could be that the 3,000 cases in Yap Island weren't enough to show an uptick in the microcephaly. Now, at the same time, the virus is spreading throughout South and Central America, and Colombia in particular has a lot of cases. And those have just begun last fall. So we'll see if there's a similar uptick in microcephaly there. You know, we haven't seen it yet anywhere else. It's only Brazil. Now, you mentioned whether there might be a mutation. It's possible, but I don't know why that would be selected for. It's not something that viruses typically do. So I think it's probably more complicated. We as of this moment, there is some evidence that the virus can get into the fetus and grow in the fetus. There are just a handful of cases where virus has been found in fetal tissue. And the most compelling one is a case where a young lady, a European woman, working in the northeast part of Brazil, she got pregnant. She went back to Europe for a checkup. At 13 weeks, everything was fine. She went back to work. And she reported early in her illness having a rash and a fever consistent with Zika. Then she went back to Europe around week 28, and they noticed that there were problems with the fetus. It looked like it had microcephaly. It wasn't moving much. And so they said, this is not going to be good for the baby. So they aborted it at 30 weeks, which is quite far on. And they found virus particles and the virus nucleic acid in the brain of this this infant. So, you know, that doesn't prove that that virus caused the defects in this child, but you really should not have any viruses in a developing fetus as far as we know. So I would say that the fact that Zika is in there in that individual child is a problem. Now, all the other cases of all the hundreds and the thousands of women with microcephaly, the Brazilian government is slowly going through each one, and a lot of them are not being confirmed. So they're saying this is not microcephaly. It doesn't fall within the guidelines. And so far, out of those 4,000 or so, they have 400 to 500 confirmed cases. And one of the issues that has arisen is they only find the virus in about 17 of these mothers. That may not mean anything because the virus may come and go very quickly early in pregnancy, do its damage, and then you don't find it later on. So my feeling is that at this point, it could be that the virus is causing a certain level of birth defects, but I have a feeling there's something else going on in Brazil as well. And people have wondered whether, for example, the use of pesticides might have contributed to this. There are certainly other causes of birth defects, including microcephaly. So it's really too early to fully implicate the virus. But I think it's pretty safe to say that every pregnant woman who gets infected with Zika is not likely to develop a child with birth defects, but we don't know what that number is.
And it's kind of scary.
Is it unusual? I mean, is this something unusual with Zika that the virus gets into the fetus, or is that something more common with other viruses?
Well, for Zika, no one ever looked, right? Because there was no reason to. In general, we don't really look in fetuses for viruses unless there's a problem, because obviously a healthy developing baby, you're not going to do anything invasive, right? At the most, you can get some amniotic fluid out, and not much of that has been done. There are certainly other viruses that do cause birth defects, and I'm glad you brought that up because I want to point out one of them. One of them is a herpes virus called cytomegalovirus, and another one is a well-known childhood pathogen, rubella virus, which when I was a kid, you know, there were outbreaks of rubella in the U.S. every 5 to 9 years. And along with those went outbreaks of congenital rubella syndrome. So if you got infected, if you were pregnant and you got infected in the first trimester, you had a good chance of having a baby with birth defects. And in the U.S., when there were outbreaks of rubella, the rate was about 1 to 2 birth defects per 1,000 live births. So it's even with rubella, where we know the virus gets in the fetus, it's rare to cause birth defects. Now, the fact that rubella did that spurred the development of a vaccine, which was licensed in the U.S. in 1969. We've eliminated this disease called congenital rubella syndrome. It's been eliminated from the U.S. because we vaccinate. But guess what? Globally, there are still 100,000 cases per year of children who were born with birth defects caused by rubella virus infection.
Wow.
So even having a vaccine doesn't mean you're going to get rid of the problem. And now everyone is clamoring in Brazil, give us a vaccine, right? But it doesn't solve the problem because you don't always get everyone vaccinated who needs to be vaccinated.
So true. So is there a vaccine on the horizon?
Well, a number of people have started to develop one. Zika is related to yellow fever virus and dengue virus, for which there are vaccines available. And so a number of people are going to use the same approach that's been used to make those vaccines for Zika. But it's going to be at least 3 to 4 years before we have a vaccine. So that's not a short-term solution.
No. And I look at this kind of twofold. One question being, how concerned should the average American be about this? And the second one, of course, as this is the disaster podcast, we could be sent into one of those areas where that virus is prevailing, and that could be a problem for a USAR team or a DMAT team. So looking at it from, taking the first question, how concerned should the average American be, and is there anything they can do about it other than the usual precautions for, you know, colds and flus and so forth?
So, of course, it's always hard to predict, right? But we can learn by our past experiences. So far, a couple of imported cases of Zika virus infection have been detected in the U.S. These are people who were infected overseas. They come to the U.S., they develop clinical signs, and they're shown to be positive. The question is whether it's going to spread to other people. Now, for it to spread, those individuals would have to be bitten by a mosquito, and the right mosquito, an Aedes-type mosquito. And there would have to be enough virus in that individual so that when the mosquito takes a blood meal, it gets enough virus to inoculate someone else. So there are really a number of conditions that have to be met. I think it's probably not going to spread very effectively in the U.S. And here's my thinking on this. So far, we've had lots of dengue virus infections imported into the U.S., but those have never spread beyond the initial few individuals. And I think the reason is that dengue, just like Zika virus, has to go from person to person. There's no animal reservoir, as far as we know, in the U.S. Now, in comparison, West Nile, that virus not only infects people, but many different kinds of animals, including birds. So there's a big reservoir of the virus out there in nature, so it's relatively easy for West Nile to spread among people. But it's harder for Zika for the same reasons that it's harder for dengue. And chikungunya is another one which has reached the Americas but doesn't spread very effectively, again, because there's no animal for that virus to go into. Now, I could be wrong, but as far as I know, there are not a lot of wild primates here in the U.S., which may be the reservoir in Africa for Zika virus. So my feeling, based on what we know, is that Zika is not likely to be an issue in the U.S.
What about the single report of a sexually transmitted case of Zika, which, you know, I have heard a little bit about, and then it kind of went away. Was it discounted?
So, Sam, that's in your neck of the woods in Colorado. That was, but you did say you moved to Colorado, right?
Yeah.
So this was Fort Collins. So what happened there was, an investigator was off, I think, in Senegal collecting mosquitoes for another project. And he got back home and developed rash. And then the rash went away. And then a few weeks later, his wife developed a rash as well. And she'd never been overseas with him. And eventually he was diagnosed as having Zika, and so was she. And so the assumption was, since there were no mosquitoes around, that it must have been sexually transmitted, although they couldn't prove it. It's a single case. He could certainly have had a little rash that he didn't notice, and maybe virus was seeping out of it, you know. So I think it's pretty weak. In the meantime, the virus has been isolated once or twice from semen of men who have been infected. Not actually infectious virus, but just fragments by PCR diagnostics. So it's sort of just like Ebola virus, where the number of people who recover, they seem to be they seem to have, the men in particular seem to have virus in semen, but we've never been able to prove sexual transmission with Ebola either. So if it does happen with Zika, I would say it's really, really rare, and we really don't need to worry about that. The worry is really the mosquito transmission.
Well, it's good to know, because I'm only a few miles away from Fort Collins.
That's right.
So I'll try to stay away from that guy. So it almost sounds like it's functioning like a bloodborne pathogen in that respect.
Absolutely. The mosquitoes are syringe. We call them flying syringes, right? They just pick up. And it's the, as you know, it's the female mosquitoes who take blood meals so that they can lay eggs. They pick up blood. And, of course, if you got a blood transfusion and that person had Zika infection, that would be a problem. If you worked with someone who is shedding blood and they were infected, you could potentially get infected as well. That's absolutely right.
So one last one question I have as we kind of start to wind down here in the last 5 or 10 minutes or so. The idea of the Olympics coming up in Brazil, is this really a major concern for world travelers coming to Rio de Janeiro to attend this world athletic event? Is this something that, I mean, seems to be a lot of concern. I knew there was a report last week that the U.S. Olympic Committee had put out a statement to the athletes that if they felt uncomfortable traveling to Brazil, that there would be no repercussions against them. Mm-hmm. As athletes?
Good question.
I think the only real concern is if you're pregnant. And we really are not sure about that, but I think it's wise to err on the safe side. So if you're pregnant early on in pregnancy, you probably shouldn't go to the Olympics. But I would guess that the athletes are not pregnant. And for them, there's really no risk. If they did get Zika infection, they would get a very, very mild disease. And they would have a 1 in 5 chance of getting that disease, then they would recover. Of course, it wouldn't be great for their athletic performance, but it's not a life-threatening event. So I would say for the vast majority of people, going to the Olympics in Rio is absolutely fine. But again, if you are pregnant or thinking of getting pregnant during the Olympics, I probably wouldn't do that.
You know, this occurred to me. Why is it only specific mosquito genuses or species carry certain viruses or certain or become transmitters of certain diseases compared to others? I mean, it's interesting to me that it has to be a specific kind of mosquito to do this.
Right. Well, the simple answer is that, you know, the virus likes a particular host, just like certain human viruses like us and like to replicate in us and not animals. In the same way, I think what happens is you have certain kinds of mosquitoes in an area of the world, wherever it may be, and the viruses evolve to be able to grow well in them. And by so doing, they don't do well in other mosquitoes. It's certainly a really interesting scientific question, and people are definitely working on understanding that, because if you could figure out, you know, why a certain mosquito doesn't propagate a virus, maybe you could get clues as to how to stop that.
Wow. I may be showing my ignorance on the subject, but if people have had the Zika infection, if you will, do they build any immunity toward this in the future? Or?
They should. Now, this is not something that before Brazil has been studied very much, but, you know, with most virus infections, when you get infected and recover, you are immune to a subsequent infection. As far as we know, there's only one type of Zika virus. And so when you recover, and most people do for sure, you should be resistant to future infections. But again, we'll know that in Brazil because they have a lot of people being infected. And in fact, that brings up a very good point. Right now, the virus is spreading like crazy in South America because people have never seen the virus before. It's come from, you know, this particular strain probably came from the Pacific Islands, and all of South America is not immune to infection. So it's going crazy. It's like a kid in a candy store. So, oh, look at all these human hosts I have to infect here. But eventually, they're all going to get immunized by infection. And then in subsequent years, there's going to be a lot less of an outbreak for sure. And we see that pattern. You know, many viruses have seasonal or multi-year outbreaks, like rubella virus used to happen only every 5 to 9 years. So the bad news is that it's spreading like crazy. The good news is probably next year it'll be much less worse.
And how likely is it in years to come, as most viruses tend to do, where it changes enough, just like the flu, where last year's immunization isn't going to do you any good.
Well, fortunately, most viruses aren't as good at changing as flu is. And so we don't have evidence that Zika is able to do that. Yellow fever doesn't change very much. Yellow fever virus is very related to Zika virus. So I suspect that we have one Zika, it's going to stay that way. And if we make a vaccine or if we make natural immunity after infection, that'll be a lifelong thing.
Wow. Jamie, I'm so glad you got him on here. I'm fascinated. I mean, there's nothing better than education on something that can affect virtually all of us. And when we're talking about all of our folks out there, some of which are providers, you know, it's something they have to be concerned with because they deal with sick people. So education is a wonderful thing. I'm sure glad we had Vince to enlighten us on this subject.
Yeah, I think Joe's going to be sorry he missed this one, but I'm sure he'll listen to it and he may have some questions to come up later on, which we will definitely email to you, Vince.
That'd be great. Well, that's my goal, Sam, is to use podcasting to get the information out from the people who know the field, right? The problem with getting information is knowing who to get it from, right? And so I tell people, if you need to know about viruses, ask a virologist or a clinician. So that's the goal of our podcasts. And we have virologists on This Week in Virology, for example, and we sit around and talk about what we think is going on. And we try and do it in a way that people can understand. And we do, our shows are pretty long, but it's the most information you're going to get anywhere on these subjects.
Well, and it's good information, too. And we know that there's could be a lot of bad, you know, stuff that floats around social media. Who knows, you know?
That's right.
I wouldn't trust any of it.
So, Vince, where can folks find you again? And how can they reach you if they want to catch up with you sometime?
Sure. So I'm on Twitter. You can find me at P-R-O-F-V-R-R on Twitter. And I have a network of podcasts, very much. I emulated you, Jamie. I put all my podcasts in one place, and you can find them all at microbe.tv. And we do This Week in Virology, This Week in Microbiology, This Week in Parasitism, and a couple more. And if you go over there, you can check them out. We have hundreds of episodes. I've been doing this now for about 8 years, and we have a nice back catalog. So check it out. And we love hearing from our listeners. And for each show, there's an email that you can use, and we answer the questions right on our show, so we make you feel like part of our podcast.
Great, and thanks again for coming on. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure. Good to talk to you again, Jamie.
So we do want to make sure we thank our sponsor, Paragon Medical Education Group, which takes care of educating people for disasters, active shooter responses, all kinds of things. If Joe was here, he'd tell us more about what they've got coming up. We're going to be at EMS Today in Baltimore next week with them, and they're going to be doing a live active shooter drill with cadavers so people can actually work on their hemorrhage control techniques and things like that, get a tourniquet and actually see if they can get it to work properly, all those things. And so you definitely want to look them up at paragonmedicalgroup.com and also at paragonmedEDU on Twitter. So we want to thank them again for their continued support of the show. And Sam, where can folks find you?
In the usual social media places, Sam Bradley or Sam Bradley 11, Twitter, Facebook, and certainly on the disasterpodcast.com. And I'm really hoping this stimulates some questions that we can send them over to Vince to answer. It's really great to have such an expert in our midst.
Yep, definitely. And folks, you can always find me under the handle PodMedic in most places online and social media, and of course over at disasterpodcast.com. So stop by, leave a comment on any of the episodes, and especially this episode, and we'll let Vince know that it's there, and he can come over and maybe leave a comment there or shoot me a comment back by email that I can leave, and we will make sure we get your questions answered. So if there's something that came up about Zika virus that we didn't cover in the show, you can check it out and leave a comment here. Or you can go over and check out Vince's recent episodes on Zika, where he goes into a lot more depth on the subject, and get the answer over there as well. So, Vince, thanks again for coming on.
You're welcome.
You know, Sam, whether it's viruses or anything else, you know, it changes the way we think about our healthcare.
and you don't know what you don't know. And I think that's what I've got out of this podcast, but I know a lot more now. So I appreciate Vince being here with us. But it's like everything else we talk about. Disaster medicine is not our everyday medicine.